Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. We record this just a few days away from the first U.S. Senate race debate, which I'm going to be one of the co-moderators of. Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, Steve Garvey, Barbara Lee, all up on stage together. It's Monday, January 22nd at 6 p.m. on Fox 11 and other stations around the state. In preview of that, we talked to Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee this week. We also talked to Republican Senate candidate Eric Early, who just missed qualifying for that debate. And a little later, a conversation about foreign policy with General David Petraeus. But let's start with Barbara Lee. We caught up with her at the Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration, the Kingdom Day Parade in Leimert Park on MLK Day. She had just ridden in the parade, and we talked to her afterwards about the state of the race, about her thoughts on the Middle East, about where she goes from here. It was a fun conversation. Here it is. Congresswoman Lee, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Glad to be back with you. Great nice seeing you.
Great to see you, too. So we've got a debate upcoming in a matter of days, the first TV debate. What's your strategy?
Well, my strategy is to speak directly to the voters, making sure the voters know that I see them, making sure voters know my experience, what I have done, how I have delivered for my district and for California, and what I intend to do in the United States Senate on their behalf.
What do you see? How do you see the state of this race? Most polls right now show you in fourth place. To advance, you got to get to second. Where do you see things?
Well, let me tell you, people are just tuning in now to this election. There's still a lot of undecideds, first of all. And the polls tell you one picture, give you one picture of a day and time. Mm-hmm. And when you look also at the polls and the increase in voters, especially young voters for Barbara Lee, what this is about is targeting our voters, making sure they get to know me, making sure that they get to the polls. That's the best, to the polls on voting day on March 5th. That's the best.
The only poll that matters is election
day,
right?
Yeah, and mail-in ballots will be coming out pretty soon.
Right.
And, you know, there'll be a special election and a primary, so I'm asking voters to vote for Barbara Lee two times, for the special and for the primary.
One of the things that have drawn a lot of young voters to you is your position when it comes to a ceasefire in the Middle East. You first called for that on October 8th. What is your position? Can you clarify what exactly you'd like to see happen in the Middle East?
Well, early on, I condemned the Hamas attack. And I talked about Israel deserves security, and we must address terrorism in the region, especially as it relates to Israel, and that the Israelis deserve to live with peace and security. And that has nothing to do with my also calling for a ceasefire, because in prosecuting this war, there is no way that now almost 24,000 civilians should have been killed, and humanitarian crisis is catastrophic. So it's in Israel's best interest that we call for, that I've called for a ceasefire, so that there can be a path to a political and diplomatic solution. This is counterproductive to Israel's security, and too many people are dying, and this is a humanitarian catastrophe, and so we have to take ownership in terms of leadership and try to help put together a diplomatic and political solution.
You know, there's some folks that are supporters of Israel that would say there is no negotiating with Hamas, an organization that believes in the destruction of Israel and destruction of the Jewish people. What do you say to that? How do you negotiate with them?
Let me say, first of all, we have to be clear that this could develop into a regional war that's going to be even more dangerous. We have to understand that we have to have the world community come together, especially the Arab nations, to make sure that there is a solution, diplomatic and political solution. Yes, Hamas needs to be eliminated. Don't eliminate Hamas by killing innocent civilians. We have to make sure that the hostages are released. How are the hostages going to be released when you have massive bombing throughout Gaza? And so, no, it's counterproductive to Israel's security. I believe that, and I believe that the only way that we're going to get the hostages released and the only way that Israel will be secure and the only way we could stop this humanitarian disaster is through a political and diplomatic solution. And we have to have the region and the Arab nations come together also to make sure that this happens.
We're out here on Martin Luther King Day. You're part of the parade here today. What does it mean for you personally to feel the love, to be here, especially wearing a shirt, elect black women, be talking about that message here?
It's very important. First of all, I'm so happy to be here. You know, I attended San Fernando Junior High and San Fernando High School, first black cheerleader at San Fernando High School. So this was my old stomping ground, especially on the weekends, and really enjoyed seeing a lot of people who I grew up with, people who moved from the Valley back into Los Angeles, family and friends, supporters, and people who know me as a member of Congress. So, and it's important also to recognize how happy I am to be here on Martin Luther King's birthday, because Dr. King, drum major for justice, drum major for peace, and he talked about we must deal with the three evils here in America: racism, militarism, and poverty. And he also said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. So what all these people are doing today, and everyone, is making that arc bend toward justice quicker and faster and more, make it permanent.
What do you think he would make of this moment in America? And as a student of him, which I know you are, how do you think about his lessons now in terms of what to do in terms of public policy going forward?
Well, first, Dr. King said the path to peace is not through violence. And after I was the only one who voted against the authorization to use force in 2001, based on that 60-word overly broad authorization, I talked to Coretta Scott King. She called me, and I saw her, and she told me, she said, Martin would be very proud of you.
Wow.
And she told me, she said, he would stand with you. Don't back down. Okay? Dr. King understood the nature of bringing the world community together, and that endless wars is not going to allow us to live and see our common humanity and work toward eliminating poverty and racism and militarism. It won't allow us to be able to build housing for the unsheltered or health care. It won't allow us to do what we have to do for the next generation in terms of our climate and our planet.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your views today. We got some nice music behind us as we were talking too.
And this is a lot of fun too.
It's a lot of
it's
fun.
It's a lot
to
of
be
fun.
Out here. It's always fun to talk with you, and best of luck on the debate stage. We'll see you soon.
See you soon, and thank you again.
Thank
I'm glad
you.
You're here.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Congresswoman.
Our thanks to Barbara Lee. Now, our conversation with Republican Attorney Eric Early, who most poll shows is in fifth place in the Senate race. He's been overtaken by Steve Garvey, who's just more famous, and he attacks him pretty hard here on our show. Take a listen.
We continue our coverage of the candidates for U.S. Senate. We welcome back to The Issue Is Eric Early. Of course, he is a Republican attorney and talk show host. He's run before for Congress and for Attorney General. Welcome back to The Issue Is. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me again, Alex.
So how do you see the state of this race right now?
Well, we're having a great campaign. The great grassroots of California all around our state are supporting me. I've been endorsed by great Republican organizations. The California Republican Assembly, Ronald Reagan called them the conscience of the Republican Party, and they are. So many great county Republican parties all around the state, great individuals. The only drawback I've seen recently is that there's a major debate coming up on Monday, and Politico and the USC School of Political Something, in their in their infinite wisdom, decided to cut the debate only to the top four. And even according to their poll, and I haven't even seen how they did the poll, I came in fifth. So there are 23 candidates in this race. Why'd they cut it to four and not go to five? Because my point of view is completely different than the three far left Democrats they're having on and the Joe Biden Republican they're having on.
So obviously, our station is a part of that, and our station management chose to set the qualifying metrics at the top four in addition to the partners. That's not my call. I have control over this show, and you're here. So I want to spend the time talking about the issues that matter and talk about the state of the race right now. And part of the reason that I think that happened is we've seen Steve Garvey's poll numbers increase. What do you make of Steve Garvey, the candidate, and his comments this week to Politico that he would consider voting for Joe Biden for president?
You know, that comment coming from somebody who calls himself a Republican is disgusting. All right. I'm known as the Trump supporter in this race. There's never been any surprise about it. I ran against Schiff before a couple years ago when he was leading the Russia hoax and the bogus impeachments. And for the person who thinks he's the lead Republican candidate, I mean, yes, he's got name recognition among certain people. I mean, he hasn't picked up a baseball bat in 40 years, at least on a baseball field. But it's disgusting. I'm the only one in this race fighting for the things that matter to all Californians: immigration, indoctrination, inflation, incarceration, immigration, over 7 million, 8 million and counting illegally across our borders. I support legal immigration with an L. I will support, as an ex-U.S. senator, sending our military to the border to stop this. Indoctrination. I've been involved in this situation for a long time. Our schools in this state and many blue states around the country have become indoctrination camps. What they're doing to our kids' brains, teaching them to hate America, dividing them by race, bringing in this sexual fluidity stuff is outrageous.
Who's teaching kids to hate America?
If you look at the curricula that they allow you to see, and I once represented a great group of parents against the Santa Barbara Unified School District.
It says hate America?
It doesn't say hate America, but they're telling them all of these things. America was bad for doing this, and America was bad for doing that, and this and that. Yes, we're not perfect.
Yeah.
But we are always striving to be a better union, and I absolutely believe this is the greatest country in human history, and I believe in American exceptionalism. I was talking about more, about incarceration. Yeah. People are living in fear all around our state thanks to these policies that have allowed the prison cells to swing wide open. We see the smash and grabs, etc. Criminals might be criminals, but a lot of them not stupid. Alex, you say, see that Nordstrom's there, see that Macy's there, that Nike? Just go in there, take anything you want, nothing will happen to you. Violent criminals have to be locked up again. And, you know, these are the kind of things I'm fighting for. And that other Republican that Politico, of course, led on the stage because they don't want my voice on that stage. Again, 23 candidates in this yeah. race for U.S. Senate. They cut it at 4 instead of 5. Seriously.
So what does, in terms of the incarceration, what do you do differently on that front?
Start with the...
From a Senate perspective, what can the U.S. Senate do on that front?
Well, that's a great question, because those are mostly state-related right. issues. But the U.S. Senator has a loud voice, or at least can use the U.S. Senator's loud voice. And I will go all around this state, speaking to our great Californians all around the state, and explain to them how we got in this situation, this state, and how we got and how we get out of it. And also inflation, huge issue. Californians are being crushed financially. Every single bill, of course, mortgages, rents, price of gas, price of food, price of utilities. There are huge things I would do. I believe in drilling again. I support our fossil fuel industry. You bring down the price of a barrel of gas, the gallons of gas prices all go down and everything else follows it.
We've done something with all of the leading candidates for Senate, which I call the four questions. Basically, try to get a quick view of you. First thing that comes to mind, short answers on this. What do you think is the biggest domestic issue facing America right now?
Right this second, we've got to lock our borders down. We can't let more millions of people into our country.
Biggest international issue?
Well, you know, we're facing possible war all over. Besides the war zones, which I'm very concerned about, both Ukraine and in the Middle East, Communist China is an enemy nation, and we as a nation have to declare them an enemy nation.
An enemy. I want to delve down on yeah. that in a moment. Committee you'd most like to serve on?
I think foreign relations right now would be a big deal, given everything that's going on.
And who is the modern senator you most admire?
Oh, that's a great one. I like the following three right now. I like Josh Hawley. I like Mike Lee. I like Ted Cruz.
So back to your point about China, an enemy nation.
Yeah.
China is our biggest trading partner. They own the majority of the U.S. debt. If you call them an enemy nation, what does that do to our economy? And what does that do to world safety?
Listen, Alex, what's going on right now is they have started a cold war against us over two decades ago. There's a great book. I recommend everybody read it. It's called The 100-Year Marathon. It's by a person named Michael Pillsbury. It talks about how starting in the 40s with Mao, there was a 100-year plan to dominate the world both economically and militarily. They are closing in on that goal, and most of their money comes from our consumers. We have to separate our two nations, just like Ronald Reagan called the Soviet Union the evil empire. We have to call Communist China the evil empire. They are spreading that Marxism. They are intent. This is what their intention is, to spread communist Marxism around this globe. We have to stop it. Will it be easy? No. But we must protect our nation from them. They are an enemy of our nation. I'm not talking about our great Chinese Americans who escaped from communism. I've got lots of Chinese American friends, so we have to protect them, but we have to start breaking up this relationship with communist China.
You are running for the seat once held by Dianne Feinstein. She left quite a legacy. She was known for the assault weapon ban. She was known for going after the CIA. She was known for protecting Lake Tahoe. When you're done, if you win the seat and you're Senator Early, what do you want to be seen as your legacy?
Doing everything possible to bring back this country from the brink. We're at a crossroads right now. We're fighting enemies, both foreign and domestic. We have domestic enemies. They've made their way the long march through the institutions into all our major government and non-government institutions. Many of them are American Marxists, and we have to get this country back for all the people again. And my legacy will be doing everything we can to bring back California from the brink, because it is on the brink, and bring back this country as well.
Is that your closing argument?
Well, that's my closing argument. Is I'm fighting for all forgotten Californians. I'm a Republican, but I'm fighting for all forgotten Californians of all political persuasions. You wake up in the morning and you see over 7 million coming across the border. You don't think there's anything you could do about it. You're a forgotten Californian. You wake up in the morning, you know your kid's going to school to get, you know, pummeled with this gender ideology. Doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl, you'd be anything you want to be. There's nothing you could do about it. You're a forgotten Californian. And I could go on and on with that list. So I fight for all forgotten Californians. And even though I'm a Republican, I need everybody's vote. Those ballots start going out next week, and every registered voter of every political party can vote for me.
So we want to now take a moment to have some fun. Play Personal Issues, which you've played on our show before, get to know you a little bit. You know, it is award season in California, one of our big industries here. So I want to ask about some of your cultural favorites. Here we go, with 30 seconds on the clock. Let's do it. What was your favorite movie of the year?
Favorite movie? Oppenheimer, absolutely.
Favorite TV show of the year?
I'm a huge fan of Yellowstone.
Favorite vacation spot in California?
I just like the North Country of California. There are various places all around the north of our beautiful state. And let me just say this, California is a grand and glorious and beautiful state. Our country, our state is failing right now, but we can get this back and turn ourselves back into the golden state again.
All right, well, there's our 30 seconds. So much of the other things. But thank you so much. It is always fun to talk to you and hear your views. And we're appreciative of showcasing a lot of views here on The Issue Is.
And finally, this week, we go to a conversation with General David Petraeus, the retired four-star general, who, of course, led the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, who was the CIA director. He's got a new book out called Conflict, talking about the basically state of warfare from 1945 until the present, and some of the mistakes that are made. We talked to him about the state of the world right now and some of those lessons from history. We caught up at the Barnes & Noble store at the Grove, where he was signing some books and meeting with Rick Caruso, and so you hear a little bit of jazz behind him. That's why he was at the Barnes & Noble. But as always, he's very insightful, and it was interesting to hear from him. So here's General Petraeus.
General David Petraeus, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Good to be with you, Alex.
Congrats on the book. You talk
Thanks.
About warfare. You think about where the U.S. is right now, and you think about conflicts in both Israel and Ukraine and other spots around the world. What do you see as the U.S.'s role right now when it comes to some of these conflicts around the world?
Well, I think we have a very significant national security interest, an economic interest in helping Ukraine, for example, helping Israel, helping maintain freedom of navigation through the Red Sea, whatever it is around the world, this is not charity. It's in our interest to do this, and in the interest of our allies and partners who help us with many of these. In fact, if I could, I think that we face the greatest number of challenges and the most complex array of challenges since the end of the Cold War at least, and maybe since the end of World War II. If you think about the competition with China in the Indo-Pacific, Russia, obviously. In fact, if you think of the U.S. as the guy in the circus who has to keep a lot of plates spinning, has help from allies and partners with a number of them, the China plate's bigger than all the others and more important. The Russia plate is very substantial. There's still North Korea. There's Iran, probably three different plates, nuclear program, support to Shia militia, and then their missile program. You have individual Islamist extremist groups around the world that we still need to keep an eye and pressure on. There are cyber threats of various types. There are domestic populism issues that create challenges. All of this, again, very, very substantial number and great complexity. And I think we have to take the lead in the world. And we do it, again, not for charitable reasons, but because it's in our national interest to do so.
I know right after the Hamas attack on Israel, you said that it was possible to eliminate Hamas. Do you still think that it's possible to eliminate from Hamas?
Well, what I said is to destroy Hamas, which actually in military terms means to render Hamas incapable of accomplishing their mission without reconstitution. I think it's possible, and that's how I put it then as well, but very, very hard, and it remains to be seen, frankly. Israel has, in the first 3 months, destroyed Hamas largely in the northern area of Gaza, some in the central and some in the south. Of course, the leader is now believed to be in the south and underneath ground and tunnel complexes under Khan Yunis, probably surrounded by not just fighters, but by hostages. So a lot of very tough fighting going on. Israel very conscious that it can't keep 7% of its workforce in uniform because of the impact on the economy. The challenges of carrying out this campaign, concerns around the world, understandable concerns about the plight of the Palestinians in Gaza, the crying need for additional humanitarian assistance. But I do believe that Israel should destroy Hamas, and I believe we should help them by providing, they're not asking us to fight, they're asking for assistance. I think it's right also, as they are seeking to do, to dismantle the Hamas political wing. Hamas cannot be allowed to run Gaza again, and then obviously to get their hostages back. But there's some very tough additional decisions that need to be made, big ideas that need to be agreed, such as who will administer Gaza after this. And I fear that it's going to have to be Israel. There's no hands going up in the region to do this. There's no competent, capable, trustworthy Palestinian entity waiting in the wings in the West Bank to come over on the backs of Israeli tanks, and they wouldn't want to do that anyway, perhaps. So that's a tough decision. And then how do you keep Hamas from reconstituting? Mm-hmm. If they're able to destroy Hamas, and I think they need to clear, hold, and build. It's essentially a counterinsurgency campaign. They are rescoping what they're doing, using far fewer large munitions, more surgical, et cetera. But this is a very challenging. And we looked, my co-author Andrew Roberts and I, at the situation since 1945, which is the subject of the book.
Sure.
We see no situation as fiendishly difficult as what Israel faces in an enemy who doesn't wear a uniform, who uses civilians as human shields, who has hundreds of miles of very well-developed infrastructure underground, holds hostages, knows the ground, and is a very formidable extremist group.
Well, let's talk more about the book. You
sure.
look at warfare, and you look at some of the same mistakes that are repeated over and over again. You say, including by Vladimir Putin in Ukraine. What are some of those key mistakes that are made?
Well, it's not getting the big ideas right. So we lay out in the introduction the intellectual construct for strategic leadership that I used when I was the commander of the surge in Iraq, starting with that, then also used as the commander of the Greater Middle East Area of Responsibility, U.S. Central Command, and then Afghanistan and CIA. It applies in a civilian setting too. There are four tasks. You have to get the big ideas right. You have to really understand the context. Again, your forces, the enemy forces, the physical terrain, the human terrain, the neighborhood, how the country is supposed to operate, how it really operates, all the elements of society and dynamics, and craft the right strategy. Then you have to communicate the big ideas effectively through the breadth and depth of the organization and to everyone who has a stake in the outcome of that conflict. Mm-hmm. You have to oversee the implementation of the big ideas, the energy, example, inspiration, how the leader spends his or her time, the metrics, hiring great people, allowing those not measuring up to move on. And you have to very explicitly sit down and determine how you need to refine the big ideas as the context evolves over time. Vladimir Putin totally underestimated the capabilities of the Ukrainians and their determination to protect Kyiv, and the leadership qualities, frankly, of President Zelensky, who has been a very effective strategic leader. Overestimated the capabilities of the Russian forces, very likely underestimated the U.S. and allied response, made really quite a serious number of miscalculations, whereas President Zelensky, very courageous, his first big idea is, I don't want a ride, I want ammunition.
Sure.
We're staying in Kyiv, my family's gonna stay here, we're gonna fight for it, we're gonna mobilize the entire country in our war of independence, our fight for survival, and all males are gonna stay in Ukraine. But the challenge is, right, that although Ukraine has performed heroically and impressively, and we've provided a substantial amount of assistance, the outcome hangs in the balance, mm-hmm, as to at least whether or not Ukraine can liberate more of its territory and prevent Russia from taking more of it, which they're trying to do right now. Very costly, incremental gains, but they are gradually, very slowly accumulating. And the challenge is, of course, that Ukraine has a population less than one-third the size that of Russia and an economy less than a tenth of Russia. And Russia has made changes, mm-hmm, and they have carried out, they have learned lessons. They've determined how to put in very formidable defenses in particular, and they're just hammering Ukraine every night through the air with drones, missiles, bombs, etc. And so this is a very challenging situation. I strongly believe that it's in the U.S. national interest, again, not charity, and obviously in the interest of NATO countries and European countries, really the Western world, to provide the assistance to Ukraine to liberate as much of their territory as they possibly can, and to do this as expeditiously as is possible, especially when it comes to the decisions that are being developed in Washington, where this is taking, in my view, too long.
Well, I could talk to you all day, but we're short on time. You can get a lot more in the book, and your proceeds go to veterans charities as well. Yet another reason to support the book. General David Petraeus, thank you so much for being on, and thank you for your service to our country.
Well, that was a privilege, and so was being with you again, Eris. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great to see you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Our thanks to General Petraeus and to Eric Early and to Barbara Lee, and for you for listening. A reminder again, that Senate debate Monday, January 22nd, 6 p.m. next week on our show. We'll be talking to Adam Schiff, who's one of the participants in that debate. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Like us, rate us, review us. Let me know what you think. And also let me know what you think of the debate. Have a great week, everybody.